All right, welcome, and I appreciate your coming back to another edition of Play the New Game. I'm Mitch Axelrod. I'm going to be your host, facilitator, and guide here today. And as a continuation to our conversation around values, today the topic is values and coaching. In our first two conversations, we talked about values in business and values in money. And so today we want to extend the conversation to both values and coaching from a perspective of being a coach, as well as values and coaching from the perspective of being coached. All right? And so I'm going to invite you, because this conversation is going to take on so much more meaning and be much more interesting and enlightening for you. If you have a question, if you have an issue, doesn't have to be specifically related to coaching. It could be a business issue, a money issue. It could be a life issue. Any question or anything you want to talk about pragmatically within your business, anything at all, I would encourage you to step out and ask a question or bring up an issue. You do not have to announce your name if you prefer to remain anonymous. That's fine, because all of what we're talking about here comes alive when we talk about it in your own experience of it. And that's one of the big distinctions of this values conversation that we've been having, is that the experience of life is where the greatest richness is. And so to participate in life, participate in the game, to get in the game, even if you're not really great at the game, it doesn't matter. Just to be in the game is where the richness of life is. And as we talk about coaching today, you'll see where sometimes we hesitate to get in the game, and I've been guilty of this my whole life. I still am trying to overcome it in certain areas of my life where I just don't jump right into the game. You know, I have to analyze it and figure it out and think about it. And that's because I'm stuck with my attention in that lower dimension of value, you know, that dimension of concepts and perfection and ideology and such. And we've talked about this. We've talked about these three different dimensions. We'll expand a little bit more on that today. So before I get started, I would love to know, is there something in particular that you would like to talk about today? And if so, you're welcome to come on out, come off of mute, and then say, hey, this is what I'd like to talk about, and we'll make sure we cover it, because it doesn't matter what it is. Everything has value, and certainly we can find value in any conversation around business, money, or life, for that matter. Okay? So I'll take a breath here. If you want to come out and ask a question, by all means. If you are thinking of one and you want to come out in a few minutes, that's fine too. I'm going to move into an agenda for today. Okay, and then once I get through this, again, if you want to jump out and ask a question or bring up an issue, I'd be happy to hear it. But you got to jump in there. This has got to be quick pace, so don't be shy. Earlier today, I had a conversation, a great conversation with Dave Buck, the CEO of Coachville. Coachville was started by Thomas Leonard back 10, 12 years ago, maybe more. And when Thomas passed away, he left it to Dave. And Dave's done a great job in expanding it and really moving it forward. And today we talked about, it was assessments week. And so each day they had somebody to talk to who used assessments of some sort, okay? And so today I got to talk about really more than just assessments, because the way I see it is that assessments, like any other tool, are just tools. It's the hammers and the nails. It's not the house itself. You are the house, all right? When you go, you want to build a house, you want to build a business, you want to build anything, you go to an expert who develops a plan to build it. You don't care so much about the hammers and the nails. Those are the tools of the trade that enable you to build the house. All right. What you care about is the finished product, and that the house is built in the way that you want it built, in the specs that you want it built. I see coaching in a very similar light. I see coaching really in that, in some way, shape, or form, you want to build something. You want to enhance something. I've used the analogy, and Dave and I got into a little tete-a-tete on this, which we had difference of opinion, but that's great, because that's what makes conversation lively and interesting. I said that from when I started back 30 years ago, I always used the analogy of being in the coaching, of being in the transportation business. And I actually used the words. I really do believe I was probably the first person who, when somebody asked me what I did in 1978, I didn't tell them what I sold because I didn't want to. I knew I had to change the conversation. I said, I'm in the transportation business. I help you get from where you are to where you want to be. All right? And now that seems like a common phrase and a common term, all right? And certainly I'd love to take some credit for bringing it to the vernacular, because truthfully, whatever business you're in, even if you're selling a widget, whatever you do for a living, your products and services are vehicles. They're transportation to get to a destination. And we all know the triggers, you know, the unconscious triggers, the conscious triggers, you know, feel better, look pretty, make more money, live longer. We all know what those human emotional triggers are, all right? But the real rubber meets the road in being able to help transport people, to help them get from where they are to where they want to be. And whether you language it that way or you create the context of that is okay. It doesn't matter. You don't have to use the words. Words are, again, tools. Words are tools to create context, to create feeling, to create image, things like that. But the real issue is to change the context, all right? And so today, I got a chance to only share one of these in depth, but I did mention all three of them. I want to talk about what I perceive to be the three C's of the new game of coaching and why I feel values and coaching have to go together. They don't have to go together. Nothing has to go together. But if you really want to do the highest and best for the people that you serve, because values are an integral part of life, and because every choice and decision we make is affected by how we see the world and how we see ourselves, then it makes sense that the more you can integrate a model of values into that process of coaching, into that process of helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, the better the transportation is going to be. And so that's the first C, is context. All right? So that's part of the agenda today is to shift the context and see whether you like it, whether you think it's corny. It doesn't matter. Just realize that from a client's perspective or a person's perspective in coaching, if that's what you're doing, what they care about is what they want, not what you do. I don't use the word coach very often, rarely, and I actually suggest to other people that they consider not using that word unless they do a certain type of coaching that clearly, when you say, I do this type of coaching or I coach people to do this, the outcome is perfectly clear, all right? And again, no right or wrong. This is just a personal feeling I have and a personal observation in my experience. You can do it what works best for you. There's no one way to run. What changing the context does, though, whether you articulate it this way or not, is it helps people to realize that they're talking to somebody who is most interested in helping them get what they want. And whether that's skill building, you know, you're going to coach somebody to build skills, or you're going to coach somebody to develop their talent, whether it's a musical coach or it's an athletic coach or you're a health coach or whatever brand of coaching you do, the outcome is where the focus is when you talk context. Content is how you do it. It's the milestones. It's the, you know, the stuff of making it happen. But the context is the frame around it. And so it's helpful to put the frame, reframe the game of coaching to transportation, if not only in your own mind, so that your conversation with people can be all about their destination, what they want, what time frame they want it, You know, if you're going to go take a trip, and this is what Dave said. He says, every time I hear that, he thinks somebody's in the travel business. Well, you know what? We are in the travel business. Because if you coach somebody to do something, or if you're attempting to coach somebody, you need to know what their destination is. You need to know a departure time. You need to know an arrival time. You need to be able to measure the journey when you get the plane up in the air and adjust for wind currents and turbulence and things like that, okay? And you need to know the mode of transportation. So some people want to take a slow, enjoyable, intrinsic journey. They don't care so much about how long it takes. Other people want to get there quick. They want to get there tomorrow. So they want the fastest transportation. You can't coach people the same way who want to travel in different modes of transportation. All right? So whatever business you're in, whatever product or service you sell, the first C of the new game of coaching, if you will, is context, is to shift the context. And the great part about this is it does not necessarily limit you insofar as your experience or your expertise. Dave and I didn't disagree. We actually we had two different points of view on the same thing. I embraced both of them. What I said was that when you consider you're in the transportation business, you are not limited by what you know. Meaning, if you can only transport somebody part of the way to their destination, and then you say, hey, I have somebody else who's going to take you the next leg of the journey, you can do that. You can help people get where they want to go. And that doesn't require necessarily your own expertise, your own knowledge, your own wisdom, because sometimes you can just help somebody because you know somebody or you know something or you have a resource or you have a relationship. His point of view was, well, we tell people at Coachville to coach what you know. And who could argue with that? I went coached what I knew. All right. So it's not that either one is right or wrong. If you apply and use both and, now you can say, okay, I coach in what I know. All right. And that's always a better road to travel because you already have a sense of experience and confidence and expertise. And if I shift the context, then I can also help people get where they want to go, even if I'm not the transportation. Maybe I can refer them to somebody else. And you don't necessarily even have to be a generalist to do that. You can be a specialist. You can be attracting people who want the specialty that you have and yet may even want more than you offer. And still you can help them get where they want to go without necessarily compromising that you want to coach them in what you know best, okay? And I also suggest that what's beautiful about using values and value profiles, which we'll talk more about as we go on, and we have talked about, and many of you have experienced this, is that it adds a dimension of enabling you to keep transporting people. So if you help people get from point A to point B and you measure that, and you say, geez, we've helped you to get to the first leg on your journey or the next step. How about we now help you get to where you want to go next from point B to point C? And so not only does shifting the context enable you to help them without the limitations that you might face if, let's say, you're new in the game or you're early in the game or you don't have particular expertise, but you can also keep transporting them and stay in the game with them longer term as long as you can help them get from where they are to where they want to be. Okay? Now, the second C, so context is the first C of the new game of coaching. The second C is coachability. And this is something I am so passionate about because the world of coaching has focused mostly on creating coaches. We haven't focused on creating coachable clients. People who are coach-able, who are transportable. My focus over the past 17 to 20 years or so, and certainly the past 17 years when I integrated the values work and the axiology and the values profiles into my practice, is that I have endeavored to work with every single person to help them be more coachable. Because if you improve your coachability, you dramatically enhance your chances of getting where you want to go, or doing what you want to do, or learning what you need to learn, or attracting even the people that you want to serve, because you're coachable, you're willing to learn, all right? And that is such a critically under-measured talent and skill. We just assume, for whatever reason, that if somebody wants to be coach, they're coachable. And the truth is, there are a lot of people who we work with, and there are a lot of companies, too. This is not just true for individuals. It's also true for businesses. There are uncoachable businesses, people who are so stuck in their systemic thinking, their obey-their-own-rules thinking, that they can't extricate themselves, and they're not very coachable because they're just too locked into their turf. And if you do any coaching, or even if you don't do coaching, if you work for somebody, you can tell. Just look around you. You can tell by observation when people are stuck in their own thinking. I call it kind of crooked thinking, okay? It's rigid systemic thinking where they break the world up into everything is either right or wrong, good or bad. And because nobody really wants to be wrong, they have to be right, they wind up sticking with decisions and choices and strategies that no longer work only because they have a vested interest in them. All right, and that's not the highest and best way for an organization to operate. It's not the highest and best way for a human being to operate. It's not the best way for teams to work together. So knowing your coachability, being willing to be coached, your level of commitment to coaching, your level of skill in a particular area, your level of talent and ability, all right? And so part of what I believe is the new game of coaching is to create coachable people. And again, that's a type of coaching in and of itself, when you really think about it, is to be able to show or help somebody be more coachable. That could be its own brand or subset of coaching right there, to teach people how to be coachable. Well, we use a shortcut in a way. We use the value profile, because the value profile essentially gives us the picture of how coachable is a person in a particular area. All right? Are they paying attention? All right? Do they have a sense of competency? Do they know what they're looking at when they look? All right? And so one of the great things that the new game of coaching offers in terms of expanding the pie for coaches is the more people we make coachable, the more business there is. And so that's the second C of the new game. The third one is clarity. And that's really what the value profile and axiology is uniquely able to measure. There is no other tool on the planet. There's no other science on the planet than the science of human values axiology that enables us to measure with a very high degree of accuracy, a person's clarity, your clarity of thinking, your clarity of doing, your clarity of feeling and working through your intuition and the intrinsic stuff. So when you look at clarity, I use the word vision, but not in terms of like a strategic vision. I use the word vision like in terms of eyesight. You know, how do you have 20/20 vision? If you have 20/20 vision, you have very sharp, crisp vision, all right, you can see everything around you. It's kind of like you get the 360-degree movie in the round experience. But when your vision, your clarity, really, is diminished or hindered or obstructed, and you don't see all there that's there to see, let's say you have 20/50 vision or 20/60 vision, you may not need glasses or corrective lenses, but you're certainly not seeing everything with the clarity that you could if you had 20/20. Now, when you get to 20/100, you now start to have really tough vision in terms of being able to see anything with clarity until you get corrective lenses, all right? And so clarity is kind of an unconscious measure. And the hard thing about clarity, and I learned this personally the hard way, is that when we don't have clarity, we don't usually know that we don't have clarity. So the real challenge of lack of clarity or diminished clarity, and it's not an affliction like a disease, all right? It can very much be a temporary condition until you get the corrective lenses. The challenge is, unless you know how to do that method where you can correct your eyesight and your vision without anything external, and I know there's a way that some people have done that, most people go and they get corrective lenses and they don't think anything of it. Yet in the world of coaching, it's my estimate from my 2,500 people that I've worked with one-on-one and the 20,000 more that I've worked with in groups, that the vast majority of us, 60, 70% of us, lack clarity in one or more of the three dimensions of value. You know, the soul, the role, the goal, the love, the serve, the obey. And if we lack clarity in that area and we make decisions that are affected by that dimension of value, our decisions, our choices will never be as good as if we had more clarity. And so the challenge is that in many cases, our blind spots are unconscious. We, you know, our eyes can see everything, but they can't see themselves. And clarity is very much like that. So if you want to work with somebody to maximize the relationship, to get a result, to help transport them, they have to be coachable. And you must know their clarity. I shouldn't use those words, okay? It's better if they're coachable, and it's certainly much better if you know their clarity. And, of course, it's true for you, too. If you know your own clarity, you're going to make much better decisions and choices as well. And so those three C's, if all three of them are present, your chances of successful coaching go up dramatically. If one or more of those are absent, then it diminishes the chances of you having a successful coaching outcome and a long-term coaching relationship and a profitable coaching relationship, all right? And so the context, you can change. You have total control over the context of the conversations that you have with people, one-on-one, groups, family, friends, everybody and anybody. Coachability and clarity are harder because they don't usually show up until after the fact. It's kind of like until you start working with somebody, you don't know that they're not coachable until you start working with them. You don't know a person lacks clarity until you start working with them, all right? And so historically, we've only been able to know about these things after we engage in a relationship. And actually, there's nothing wrong with that. That's kind of part of getting to know somebody and learn about somebody. The thing is, though, in a professional coaching relationship, as opposed to, let's say, a personal or private or social relationship where you're not doing it necessarily as a commercial venture, but as a professional coach who is getting paid for services, your knowledge of a person's coachability and clarity, your ability to help them discover and measure these two critical measures of success enhance dramatically your value to them and also their likelihood of achieving the outcomes. And so that's where axiology, values, and the value profile I find to be really the most valuable tool, and not only in terms of time, because you can't get to this information except in long, long, long time working with somebody or developing a relationship with them or spending time with them or coaching them and interacting with them. A lot of it we can get up front, and we can get it in under 20 minutes. I say 15 minutes because that's usually what it takes. So why would we not want to capitalize on using the most advanced tool of its kind in the one area that it is the only only tool that can measure specifically clarity, but also coachability, and then to be able to shorten and reduce the friction, shorten the time frame, reduce the friction of the journey, because you're not bouncing into things. You know, you're not bouncing into somebody 3 weeks down the road who's uncoachable or doesn't want to pay attention to plans, just wants to run by the seat of his pants, or they don't have clarity, and you're trying to get them to see how it's much better if they alter their diet, but, you know, they don't have clarity around the good foods, or they can't, you know, they don't have a sense of practical common sense or results orientation, so they don't care, they don't pay attention. And there's hundreds of different possible combinations and permutations. So I see life as a three-dimensional game. And that's how I model most of what I personally do in my work. I like the power of three, so it's a nice, easy way to operate in life. And it just so happens that the values, the axiological model of values, is a three-dimensional model. And we've mentioned it before, soul, role, goal. Those are my terms for the three dimensions of value. That's a way for you to embrace it and use it, even if you don't ever go beyond this conversation. You can recognize this hierarchy of value in the world and in yourself by using this model of soul, role, goal. Your soul, your spirit, the person of who you are is more valuable, most valuable, and it's more valuable than role. Role is what you do, all right? And what you do creates results, and that's all the role-related things. And that's more valuable than goal. Goal is important. The concept of a car is critical to building the car. The idea of having a destination, a goal in mind, is very important for some people. Not critical, but it's important. However, life is actually lived in the role and the soul. The goal is the one dimension of value, the systemic dimension that exists only in concept, only in idea. And yet, the greatest perversions of value, the most heinous acts of things like torture, murder, those kinds of dehumanizing acts are sourced in what Dr. Hartman called systemic abuse. He actually termed the abuse of humans in the intrinsic valuation and the extrinsic valuation. In other words, he called any kind of soul or role abuse, he called it systemic abuse. And he said every culture, every group of people, every government, every organization, right down to the single individual, if you value the systemic, the value the goal, value the idea and the concept more than you value the thing itself or more than you value the human being, then your value structure is inverted. Does that make you bad or wrong? No. It's crooked thinking. And nobody's here judging what is perfect. There is no perfect thinking. But he said and proved that if we value obey more than we value serve and love, we are placing a lower value in a higher value position. And as I said on a couple of prior calls, there's a very simple prescription. Once you know the diagnosis, it's not an easy prescription because we're so culturally conditioned already to make goal more important than role and more important than soul. And we're going to talk about this as it relates to stress factors because we have a question that comes directly to this, and it's a perfect time to actually bring this up because when you talk about soul, when you talk about role, when you talk about goal, you don't have to be a trained axiologist and you don't have to immerse yourself in the science to live every day out of a better balance of that hierarchy. And if you apply it to life, if you apply it to your kids, your family, your relationships, your spouse, your loved ones, your significant other, your partners in business, your customers, It's a very simple model by which you can say, hey, when given a choice between obey and serve, I'm going to serve. If given a choice between obey and love, I'm going to love. And that includes others as well as myself. And when given a choice to order my values, I don't have to give up my goal to sacrifice my goal so that I can enjoy my role and nurture my soul. I want to establish a goal in the context of nurturing my soul and fulfilling my role and getting joy and satisfaction as well as economic payoff from what I do with my precious minutes and moments and of my life. And so, you know, the real value here is not just in the tool, although in a minute I'm going to show you the value of the tool is extraordinary. And when we step beyond the label of assessment and we recognize that what we're really doing is we're getting, like we're running a battery of tests, you know, to see where we are today. If we want to achieve optimal health, then we see where we are today relative to all the important markers. And then we say, okay, I want to improve this marker, and this marker. The others are looking pretty good, all right? And you go to work on those markers of your own physical, biological body and improve the overall well-being and health of your physical being. Same thing in terms of your spirit, your soul, same thing in terms of your thinking. And so in conclusion here, I want to just say that and I'm going to point you to a couple of things because the application of this in everything that you do, most people think in terms of using a value profile if they're a coach, if they're a trainer, if they're a consultant, if they're a speaker, all right, or in some capacity of being a helper. But if I had a widget shop, whatever my widget was, unless I was selling just a commodity widget, but if I had a widget shop and I was selling widgets to people, I would want to offer everything that I could possibly offer that would add value to that relationship, even if it had absolutely nothing to do with the widget that I offered. All right, and that's really the whole shift in the new game of business that everybody is now finally catching up to recognize that if you want to establish the position as a trusted advisor, the service provider of choice, your widget, my widget, everybody else's widget is not that much different. But the intangibles, the value add as commonly termed, is the difference. And you don't have to limit your value add just to the framework of the product or service that you're offering. It could be completely tangential. If it helps the person get from where they are to where they want to be, have a better buying experience, then it's something that you should consider and entertain. And certainly utilizing this science is one, helping people to determine where they want to go in the context of transportation is another. And, of course, using the actual tool itself, the value profile. And so if you're not familiar with the profile itself or you've not ever done a profile, I want to just give you out a couple of URLs, a couple of domains that you can become familiar and actually get a taste of it at a very, very modest investment. The first one is thenewgame.com/clarity101. thenewgame.com/clarity101. And that's basically just an entry-level experience where you can get access to doing a profile and then be part of these conversations that we have specifically for the value profile and actually get some group interaction and also give you a little framework, a little insight into the background of it. Our main site at the moment is valueprofiles.com. Valueprofiles.com, it's a completely text site for now. And you'll see different categories, you'll see samples, you'll see history, you'll see special reports. And then the other one I want to draw your attention to, which is our reseller program, is value, I'm sorry, it's thenewgame.com /profiler with an R at the end, thenewgame.com/profiler. And that program, basically, we give you about 15 or 20 hours of audio training, and you get the resale rights to 30 or 35 different reports. And as an example of a report, which I want to actually transition into the next part of our conversation, if you go to thenewgame.com/sales.pdf, that's a sample of a report. It's called a sales assessment. And what it does suggest is that, and we're going to go through this in a minute, is that you can see the different categories of things that we can measure. You can see the different capacities of things that we can measure. And labels are unfair in that they don't really tell you what the value and the depth of what's there. We're going to come back to that. We're going to talk about that right now. So those three, again, thenewgame.com/clarity101. That's an introductory offer to get a value profile and a few other things for a modest investment. Valueprofiles.com, currently our main site with most of the information. And then our reseller program, thenewgame.com/profiler. And the good thing about that right now, at least for the next couple of weeks or maybe a month, is I'm giving away a free consultation with that, a 60 or 90 minute consultation, I'm not sure which, it's in there. If you don't already own it, if you do sign up to be a profiler, you're going to get access to our $400 program called The New Game of Selling. Okay? And that New Game of Selling has produced $2 billion of revenue, and I will tell you that I use that program in every situation I'm in, regardless of who I'm talking to. So you get those two extras because we really want to try to get another group of profilers, and I believe the investment just for the feedback session is worth it in and of itself. All right, so you can look up that. Now, the profile I want to give you a sense of, because this came up as a question. It's a very important question. I want to, Mike, if you're willing to ask it again, I would love to discuss it with you if you're still out there. And that is at thenewgame.com/sales.pdf, you'll see an example of our sales report. And Mike had a question earlier that we want to address. So, Mike, are you there? I hope we didn't lose him. Well, maybe we did. Okay, so Mike had a question about something very specific, and this is really a great example of how when you get away from the label of what you think you do and you get into the outcomes and the results. Are you there, Mike? Oh, I thought I heard you. Okay. If you do come on, just jump right in. And so instead of looking at the label of what you do, you look at what it is the person you're serving wants to accomplish, or what is the problem or the affliction or the challenge that people are facing. And if you're able to get this up on your computer at thenewgame.com/sales.pdf, I want to draw your attention to page 12. And then I'm going to draw your attention, actually it'll be page 11, and that's stress factors, okay? I don't know of any other tool on the planet that can tell you what your mental stress factors are. We have all kinds of tools, all kinds of tests to measure things that manifest as stress, you know, high blood pressure, whatever else, maybe whatever other medical markers there might be that either result of stress or can be determined that stress plays a part in it, all right? But there's no way to measure, other than using this science, what are the underlying stress factors that are causing you to feel that. And because there's no other model to ameliorate the stress other than, let's say, a diagnosis and then some medication, cut back on your hours, eat better, all of those are important, all right, but they don't get to some of the critical mental stress factors that are causing the stress. Guess what? We can measure that. Why is that important? It could be easily overlooked as just another page in another assessment, in another report that, you know, I've seen them all before. But the truth is that stress costs American business $300 billion a year. That's the financial cost. You can pretty well figure out what the emotional cost is, what the psychological cost is, what the cost is in terms of families and relationships and all of the human cost of stress, not just the economic, you know, extrinsic cost, but the intrinsic human cost of stress. So when you look at being in the transportation business and to be able to help somebody to identify and maybe even isolate what's causing their stress, and to be able to do it in a whole new way that can open up a whole new dialogue and a whole new conversation, do you think that has some value to almost everybody you talk to on the planet, particularly today with everything in such upheaval? So this was a great question. I wish Mike were still here to kind of elaborate on what he wanted to ask about this. So I'm going to riff through it as best I can. But he did bring up a tremendous point. He says, you know, I never really looked at, and he's done the value profile, I've never really looked at these stress factors before in the way that I look at it now because things have changed. And for the first time now, I'm realizing that that there's a potential for me to reduce my stress by understanding this model of where the stress is coming from. And you'll notice that the first three on the list are the three that most people show up with. Those I renamed the first one from self-sufficiency. I call it soul frustration. And the other two are role frustration and goal frustration. All right, and this is a fabricated sample, but I will tell you that about 70% of the people that we work with have one or more of soul frustration, role frustration, goal frustration. Many people have two, and a lot of people have all three. All right, and I've had all three, so I know the challenge of soul, role, and goal frustration. And so when you look at, for example, using a tool like this that enables us to get right down into a very specific category, you could literally throw the rest of this assessment away if you wanted to, all right? If you stop thinking just in terms of it's a tool, you know, let's use the whole tool. In some cases, you don't need to use all of the tools in your tool belt to whip up, you know, something or get something built. Sometimes you only need to use one tool. And so what is the potential application and prescription and payoff to be able to help individuals as well as companies identify, isolate, and then find a way to alleviate these stress factors? Because soul frustration, role frustration, goal frustration, they're just the first three. You know, then you've got flexibility. Then you've got handling despair. How well do you handle despair when things don't go well? Then you've got what we call the attitude index, all right? Are you the kind of person who has a really, really good attitude and that doesn't affect you? Things going bad doesn't affect you. You're always positive. You're optimistic. Or does your attitude also create stress? And then what we call a health tension index, which is it's kind of a composite measure of how you manage anxiety and despair and in some cases depression. Well, nobody's having this kind of conversation. They're not having that kind of conversation about stress. Maybe at the therapist's office, but other than a cursory conversation and not being had in the medical community much, certainly the prescription most often, or certainly often, is some medicinal prescription, medication of some kind, you know, work less maybe, Don't take things so personally. But there's no way to identify and isolate and get down into the nitty-gritty of, guess what? You have role frustration. What does that mean? That means that you're feeling like the time that you're spending, what you do with your precious moments and minutes, maybe your work, maybe your roles in family, maybe whatever, your role, maybe the results, maybe you're not living up to your ability, maybe you're feeling like I'm not doing what I really am here to do. All of that contributes to role frustration. And unless you can have a conversation about that, or unless you at least you can see that that is not a medicinal problem, but maybe a shift in paradigm or a context shift or a shift in values, it's really a values issue, now you can get at it. And now you can find that you can alleviate or eliminate some of that stress by having a different way to frame the game and see it in a different light. And that's a very, very healthy way of being able to work with stress, certainly a lot less expensive and a lot less time-consuming than all of the other measures that we take, all right? And so in 15 minutes, we can get at this information. We can get at the cause of this, at least the root cause of it. If you go to page 12, the next page, I want to talk a little bit about motivation because I want to show you how throwing the box away and realizing that we're in the transportation business and the more that we can help people get from where they are to where they want to be, the easier it's going to be for us to be of service to people. All right, and that does not exclude coaching the game that you know. It's inclusive of that. If you coach a game you know, you're going to be that much more effective when you know these specific issues that people deal with and be able to overcome. So, I mean, if you just imagine you're trying to coach somebody or you're trying to be coached and there's stress in the way and you don't know what that stress is and you're trying to implement your coaching plan or you're trying to work on your skills or you're coaching somebody to try to develop a talent or to implement a strategic plan or to go out and make, you know, 50 client interviews or whatever it may be, and you don't know that this person is suffering from a major case of role frustration. And just the very work that they're doing is not giving them satisfaction, and here we're telling them to do more of it. You know, and we don't even know because we don't know their clarity, we don't know their stress, and they don't know, other than just the feeling they have internally, that this is role frustration. And yet, that gap between the unconscious and the conscious information is where people fall into the Grand Canyon of lost opportunity. So if you go to page 12, just as another quick example, sources of motivation, I love this one. Here's one page that could be worth millions of dollars to companies, certainly worth a fortune to you. If you are able to measure in 15 minutes what motivates a person, what gets them up in the morning, not only in terms of the order of motivation, and this is a sample, you see that in this sample, what motivates this person most is service, the first item. What motivates them second is a sense of mission. What motivates them third in order is a sense of belonging. Okay? Now, you not only know what motivates them, you know what order of things motivates them. So you also know the intensity of motivation. So let's say this is a person you're coaching or this is a person that you're working with and you're trying to get the most out of them, so you want to be able to motivate them based on what will get them going. And you don't know this, you don't have this information, and you just assume that money is an important motivation, maybe because they say they want to make more money. All right, but just because I say I want to make more money doesn't mean I'm motivated by money or I'm motivated to make more money. And so you proceed on the assumption that, well, money is important. Let's talk about making more money. And somehow you don't acknowledge that service is what their primary driver, motivator is, and that their sense of mission and purpose, as well as belonging to a team, being part of something, is equally driving as motivation for them. And that actually money could be a demotivator. That if you put too much emphasis on money as a motivator, not only do you miss the motivators that will actually get them up in the morning, but you can actually demotivate. And I've had that, and I'm sure you've had that, where people have tried to motivate you based on what they think you ought to be motivated by, and it leaves you cold. It leaves you actually colder than if they didn't try to motivate you at all. So look at this one page. Forget the rest of what's in here. Imagine if you had the information here with every single person that you're either coaching or working with or trying to help in some way, if you had it about yourself. And you could show that to other people who are out to support you and say, wait a second, before we go too far down the money trail, I want you to know that I am most motivated by service, by a sense of personal mission or company mission and a sense of belonging. And if I can find those values in this work, in this job, in this company, I'm going to come here every day. I'm going to be motivated to do what I need to do. And that doesn't mean I don't want money. It just means that what actually gets me up to come and do my work is not money. It's these other motivators. Now, imagine trying to get people to perform without this information. Just think about that. Just one set of data. Imagine trying to get them to perform without knowing their stress factors or whether they can handle rejection or whether they're, you know, really prefer to work with people and like people and on and on and on. So I was very happy when Mike brought up this question because it gets to the specifics of values, that it doesn't have to be this global game that I have to know everything about you to be able to help you, because that's probably just TMI, too much information to be able to integrate. But if I know that you're stuck somewhere because I have a tool that x-rays your brain, your thinking, and shows you where you're stuck, not only can I help you get where you want to go, but I can help you get unstuck and maybe avoid those pitfalls and those obstacles along the way. And so that's why I feel that the new game of coaching is a values game, that whatever coaching or type of coaching you do, that when you integrate this conversation, you integrate the awareness and the consciousness that there is a value model of soul, role, goal, that there's a hierarchy in business of love, serve, and obey, it absolutely changes the game, and it makes the game so much more fun to play. So that's what I have to talk about today, and we're going to go on further, but right now I would love to get your question, your feedback, or anything that's come up for you that you would like to throw on the table for us to discuss and you know, bring this into a real live experience. So please, if you're with us, please feel free to ask something or comment or whatever it may be. You don't have to use your name. You can stay anonymous.
Hey, Mitch.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. It's Jeff Peoples, and I was just wondering if you could quickly distinguish some of the new things you're doing with Axiometrics from the old programs, and just give me a quick update on that. I basically just wanted for you to distinguish this new plan, and you know, I was thinking, well, geez, maybe I go and offer this to some of my clients, and
sure.
But I'm just wondering how that all works. And
yeah, good to hear your voice, Jeff.
Oh, thanks.
It's been a while since we've chatted.
Yeah, yeah. I got your email. And I said, oh, I want to see what you're up to.
Well,
so
great. I would love to chat with you offline too, if you want.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, what we're doing is we're looking at now this value. You know, again, it's the difference of offering a widget, which is a profile, which is an assessment, and offering a solution. And although it's probably more involved than I can get into here, I'm going to summarize it with a quick example. And this is what I'm testing now. It's working, and I know it's going to work because there's tons of companies out there that are desperate to get more value out of what you would call their human capital, not to mention more profit, less absenteeism, you know, that kind of thing. All of those numbers really go into the bottom line of a company. And so the formula for me is very simple. The question is 1%, meaning is it worth 1% of a person's income to know with absolute certainty how to use that person, not use them in the negative sense, but how to use that person and have that person contribute their highest and best capacity to the company. And when you, you know, obviously 1% is just a range of numbers, but it works very well because if you look at the aggregate salary structure of a company and you look at what the upside potential is and you look at how much they're paying in perks and Social Security and all these other extra expenses, and you say, well, for 1%, we can not only identify and isolate all of those obstacles that a person is facing, but we can also kind of give you some insight into how you might be able to get more value out of that person. And so just as a simple financial model, that's the way that I've been approaching businesses. And it's a number that they can get their arms around. Now, you're not necessarily, if you got a company of 10,000 people, you're not necessarily going to do 10,000 people. You might, you know, operate with the 500 who are most affecting the top or bottom line, or do it in phases. But if you're working with a company, you know, with five people all the way up to maybe 1,000 people, that's well within the range of being able to say, hey, we could get a pretty good return on investment. Now, obviously, the real big applications for this are in the departments where people affect the top and bottom lines the most: sales, management, customer service. Okay? Mm-hmm. And those are the three areas. Most of the time, people are not as apt to profile the clerical workers or maybe the admin. I think it's a big mistake because those people have so much more to offer. And as you know, because we've worked together a little bit about this, you know, what's the right cost of hiring somebody who's not appropriate for that work?
Yeah, it's very expensive. Right?
Very expensive. And so even to have a little bit of insight before you hire them, and I think maybe once or twice you might have made a different decision having the profile than you would have made if you didn't have the profile report, you know. And not everything is perfect, right, so it doesn't always work out 100%, but it ups the chances. And so that's just on the front end of the hiring side. But when you look at the assets of the people that are already there, the management team, obviously, from, you know, the upper-level management all the way down to mid and lower management, sales for sure, because the sales department is cranking out the revenue stream, and then the customer service area, which in my estimation is one of the most undertapped and underutilized. Because, again, the old game thinking is that customer service is about solving problems, and the new game thinking is about customer service is serving the customer in a way that they not only want to come back for more, but that you uncover those immediate needs right now, and you turn customer service from an expense department into a profit center. And right, for me, that's where I think – you know, the gusto is. You know, there's a lot of executive coaching going on, and a lot of times companies, as you know, they choose not to do executive coaching as much by personal agenda as they do by corporate agenda. You know, so if the management team is amenable to it, if they're open to it, they say, geez, you know, we would love to do this, and have an ongoing executive coaching program and use values as the foundation of it. All right, but when you go in and you talk about turning customer service from an expense department into a profit center, and as part of that process, we can assess the current state of the people you have there for their ability to, you know, to not just give good customer service, but now begin to expand and enlarge the customer relationship and actually sell more stuff. That's very appealing. you know, because that's already an expense area. So this is kind of where, you know, where I'm moving a lot more. And obviously there's, you know, there's more depth to it, and certainly be happy to chat with you individually if you like. I don't know. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah, that does. That does. It's good. Yep.
Well, I'm thrilled that you joined us.
Good.
Good to have you. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments or situations or applications you'd like to talk about? Do you want to give any feedback about this at all, as far as the value of the takeaway value here? What was the most valuable thing you got? All right.
You know, I'll comment.
Please.
You know, it's good to get an update. It's also good to really look at how we can use this technology. I mean, you just reminded me how important it is to really look at people like tech support or customer service people, and you're absolutely right that that's an essential area. And you know, the challenge for me is how do you actually deal with the culture, because those people don't think of themselves as salespeople, that's the challenge I hear. But I agree with you 100%. Boy, that's a huge area for because they've already got the relationship, and the people are coming to them. That's really what the idea of marketing is to get people to come to you. And they're coming to the support people, and they're coming to the customer service people with their things, and they're opening up in such a bigger way. And the challenge really is to get them to either transfer that information or to transfer the way they think about themselves to actually pointing out the other solutions.
Well, that's a brilliant insight. And why this motivation piece is so important is because everybody has some sort of motivation. And so if you really break it down to the individual, and you get down to the level of the individual, you don't see your customer service as a department so much. You see customer service as a team of individuals who most of the time they don't play together because they're all individually handling, you know, their own individual customers. But there is certainly an aspect of team, and there's certainly an incentive that each one of them has. And again, I've always maintained that one of the big fallacies of corporate America, and that's true for any size business really, is that when you get down to a job description of what are the tasks and responsibilities associated with a person's job, what you're actually doing is you're unconsciously and unwittingly and probably unintentionally, but you're still doing it just the same, is you're shrinking the value of the person to the set of tasks that are included in the job description. So if you have a customer service department and you have a protocol and you have your policies, and let's say maybe you're in the hospital industry and, you know, you're designed to get them off the phone in 3 minutes or less because you don't want to spend any more time with them, well, that's very, very difficult kind of culture to shift, because there's no real respect for the value of the individual customer service person. They're just there as a group of people following protocol, following policy designed to help, you know, solve the problem, get the person off the phone as quickly as possible. And so if you don't see people as people, it's very hard to change the culture. On the other hand, if you say you've got 50 people in customer service, you've got 50 individuals there, each one of them has his own or her own motivation. You run a value profile on each person, at least enough to find out what gets them up in the morning, what trips their trigger, what makes them want to either grow as a person or grow in their professional life. And now you say, hey, guess what? We're going to help you become that better person that you want to become. And if you have six different motivators, using our profile as an example, and you've got 36 people in customer service, let's say, and you just divide the numbers. So you say, okay, six people are motivated most by money, six by service, six by personal development. Doesn't matter. I'm just making this up. Well, guess what? We're going to now create an environment and create a team by which you guys are going to help us to better serve people. So you cover the people who want to serve people. As a result of better serving people, we're going to help you share in any new business that comes out of that. So you've got the money motivator covered. We're going to teach you. We're going to train you. We're going to give you some added skills to be able to do this. So guess what? Even if you ever leave here and decide to go to work somewhere else, you can take the training and development that we're going to give you, and it'll be yours for life. We're willing to invest in that. Guess what?
Right.
We have a sense of belonging here. We're going to do this as a team. We're going to have a mission to, out of every customer we talk to, we're going to try to find. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. I was just, you know, the first thing that popped up. I love the idea of creating the team. Where we've been challenged is sometimes seeing, okay, well, you know, this person wants more money, but and then all of a sudden, how do you give individual incentives? Maybe I'm just overly worried about HR issues, but you know,
yeah.
It seems like
There's no perfect solution, but you know what? People are remarkable if you don't bring them down to that lowest common denominator. You know, again, the idea or the picture of shrinking a person to fit a job description, as opposed to saying to the person, what more can you contribute? What more would you like to contribute? How would you like to contribute more? How do you want to use this job as a means to your own personal goals and objectives in life? It's not, you know, for some people, they just come in, they punch the clock, they do the task, they go out. Okay? That's it. That's all their work is to them, and that's okay, as long as they do their work. And so you're not going to appeal to the better nature of everybody, but the idea is, let's say only 25% of your customer service people respond to this, and the others say, all right, we'll walk through the motions, okay? But the 25% who respond to this all of a sudden start producing enough revenue maybe to turn your customer service from red ink and expense into break even. Or maybe they create new business. Or maybe 10% of your customer service people become superstars at this. And they then say, hey, look at these 10%, how good they're doing. And some of the others come along. So in other words, you don't need 100% compliance. What you need is essentially enough incentive and enough compliance and enough excitement and enough energy so that a large enough percentage of people take whatever motivates them internally, turns it into, you know, some performance-based result, and you reap the rewards. You reap all the rewards of that. So as a quick example, when I go into corporations and they want me to work with, let's say, their top producers, or if they want me to work with their entire group of people across the board, I say to them point blank, listen, I do not expect, nor should you, 100% compliance. Let's face it, if you got 20% or 25% of the people to do anything, you'd probably be happy. But here's the real richness of this. We only need 10 or 20% of the people to actually do something, because that 10 or 20% will get you more than enough return on investment for the other 70 or 80 or 90% who do marginal improvement. And so the question becomes, do you sacrifice the 10 or 20 or 30% of the people who really want to do more and contribute more because you can't satisfy the other 60 or 70 or 80%? And unfortunately, a lot of companies are playing defensively. You know, they worry more about the 80% who are not going to embrace than the 20% who will embrace, and that 20% could take you to the moon.
Right. Yeah, no, what you're saying is, hey, look, if you get a little bit, that's better than nothing, and it starts something in the motion that might go all the way, and during the meantime, it might pay its way for everything else. So
exactly.
That makes sense.
Exactly. Great question. Thank you so much. I mean, that was really terrific. Appreciate it, Jeff. Anybody else want to jump in here before we conclude for the day?
Sure, I will. Mitch, this is Don Straits.
Hi, Don.
How are you today?
Good, thank you.
I've enjoyed your session.
Thank you. I've enjoyed having you.
My company is Corporate Warriors, corporatewarriors.com. I primarily do career strategy coaching. About 30% of the time that I spend with people is on pure coaching. The other 70% of the time is spent on strategy and tactics. Mm-hmm. It's more of a serving up tools on a how-to as opposed to on the coaching side. And I ask for comments on the takeaways. I like your use of the comments, the three soul frustration, role frustration, and goal frustration, and the challenge of handling despair. Boy, I deal with that on a daily basis. Because probably 80% of the people I work with are unemployed looking for a new challenge. And so every single one of them, without exception, is faced with handling despair. Yeah, major challenge. And so, your comments just prompt me to say to myself, I have to even work harder on that and think it through to bring people to a level of acceptance and motivation so that they are more likely to be energetic, enthusiastic about going out there and finding a new challenge.
And you can see the value that you bring now that you see the depth of the despair that the people are trying to handle. Right.
Yep. The biggest are the ones who fall the most. Virtually all of my clients are VPs to CEOs, mm-hmm. and they invariably fall the hardest. And so despair for them is huge because their lives are centered around their career and their, quote, stature with their friends and family and community, et cetera. And when that disappears, their despair is monumental.
Well, and that... By the very nature that we're holistic beings, mm-hmm. Although when we run profiles, we run them categorically, so we can take a category and separate it out. We can take a capacity like handling despair and separate it out as its own unique individual characteristic. But mm-hmm. we know that if you're having trouble handling despair, it could also be caused by role frustration. Could be a result of not being able to handle despair. So you start getting frustrated about your role or your goal, and they spill over into the other areas, mm-hmm. Because they all work together. We're, integrated.
Right.
So that's great.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, and I would that's wonderful. I'd love to learn more about what you do. And
I would love to. Is there a number, or how do I reach you
off this call? Oh, sure. You can call my office at 973-736. 1304.
Okay. And where are you located physically?
I'm in New Jersey.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for sharing that.
You bet.
Anybody else want to jump in and share either a takeaway or something that they want some insight into or a conversation around? Going once, going twice. All right.
On.
We're gone. All right, well, I want to thank you again for being here, because without you, I wouldn't be here. We will post this conversation on the blog at playthenewgame.com. Let's see, today is Wednesday, so tomorrow we're going to kind of bring this all together in terms of talking about the next step in this values conversation, which is partly the values coaching network that I'm eager to unveil, and also talking about how can you take the next step here if you'd like to either getting more involved with us personally or do a profile or be a reseller or just have a conversation if we can be of service to you. So thank you once again. Feel free to tell your friends and family, and we'll see you again tomorrow for another edition of Play the New Game. Have a good day, and you're a player. You can change the game. I'll see you again tomorrow.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Yep. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.